Let's get together, talk about the movies that we saw this week. We'll have discussions, talk film news, we'll laugh a lot and act like geeks. Sometimes we'll have a guest or two, sometimes it's just the two of us. Let's crack some jokes and tell some folks to come along and hang with us!
Mike and Mike go to the movies. Mike and Mike go to the movies.
Yeah!
You have chosen wisely.
This is a true story. The events depicted in this podcast took place on Skype in 2023. At the request of the survivors, the names have been changed. Out of respect for the dead, the rest has been told exactly as it occurred. It's Mike and Mike Go to the Movies. I'm Mike Smith, and sometimes there's a man. And I'm talking about my co-host here. Sometimes there's a man, well, he's the man for his time and place. He fits right in there, and that's my co-host in Los Angeles. And even if he's a lazy man, and my co-host certainly is that, quite possibly the laziest in Los Angeles County, which would place him high on the running for laziest worldwide. But sometimes there's a man. Sometimes there's a man. Oh, I lost my train of thought here, but hell, I've done introduced him enough. It's Mike DiCriscio, ladies and gentlemen.
Hello. Thanks for the insult, I think. I think also the worst part about that is you're revealing before God and the internet that we still record this with Skype. How dare you?
Yeah, I'm sorry, everyone. Yeah, we're not sophisticated enough for Zoom. You know, Zoom costs money.
We're not. We don't have dollars enough to do it on Zoom.
Exactly. Yeah. No, we do things on Skype, like the poor people that we are. Also joining us this week is a man who's funny looking, just in a general sort of way. Nick Wormuth, welcome back to the podcast.
Oh, I'm happy Mike didn't get the only insult.
Thanks, Nick.
Yes. How are you doing today, Nick?
Doing all right. I will say the Montana in you has really helped your Sam Elliott impression.
Thank you. Yeah. 5 years living out here really like turns everybody into Sam Elliott at some point or another. Yeah. And Nick, you are joining us today because you actually had the idea for today's episode. And you texted me and was like, yeah, no, this is a fun idea. You sent me a few ideas. You sent me a few concepts that you wanted to throw out there. I think the one you were really gunning for was let's rank Toho Godzilla movies.
Yeah, I'm constantly someone who's trying to sell other people on watching all of those, but I guess that wasn't in your bag.
Yeah, well, you know what? I love Toho Godzilla movies. I own the Criterion Collection, you know, Toho thing, which has like, I think the Showa era, right? Is that what it is? So that's like, you know, 14 of the old Godzilla movies that go from like 1954 through 1978 or something. I've watched maybe 6 or 7 of them. It's one of those things where like every once in a while, I'm like, all right, it's time to watch the next one in that box set, really savoring those Godzilla movies. But the reason you wanted to do that is, of course, because Godzilla Minus One just came out. I've seen it. I think it's fantastic. I think you saw it twice. Am I right?
Yes.
Nice.
Within
a matter of
5 days. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're a fan of Godzilla Minus One, I would guess.
I just bumped it up to 5 stars the other day. I cannot express how much I love that movie.
Nice. Are you in the camp that's like, this is basically the best Godzilla movie ever or the best one since the first one?
I think, yeah, it's very close. The very first Godzilla and then this one and Shin Godzilla are like, eh, I don't know. I feel like this one has like a recency bias thing going towards it, but also the World War II stuff just blew me away. I don't know.
Nice. Yeah, I also loved Godzilla Minus One. So yeah, giving a shout out to it on this podcast. Mike D, you haven't seen it yet, right?
I have not gotten to see it yet. I was planning to actually this past weekend until we got a text from my boss that somebody tested positive at work and we were all potentially exposed to COVID.
Oh, no.
So I was like, well, I guess I'll just stay inside for 5 days. So I haven't gotten a chance to go see it, but hopefully it'll still be around next weekend also. It seems like it just keeps word of mouth getting extended longer and longer. So
yeah.
I still have be hope yet for me to see it in theaters.
Yeah, it seems to be doing really well. Apparently, I didn't realize this was the plan, but I guess it was originally only supposed to be out for a single weekend or like 1 week, you know, and then it was going to get pulled from theaters. But because it did so well and because it's been so highly acclaimed, people have been coming out for Godzilla Minus One. And so they've extended its run. And so if you haven't seen Godzilla Minus One yet, cannot recommend enough. It's so, so fun. Such a great Godzilla movie. And yeah, like Nick said, it's a full 5 stars from Nick, our resident Godzilla expert, who, you know, we had on the podcast to talk about Godzilla versus Kong,
right?
When that came out in 2021. And if we review Godzilla X Kong, the New Empire, in a few months when that comes out, I'm sure we'll have Nick on again for that one. If we end up reviewing, I don't know if it's gonna happen.
Happy to be here if you need me. Yeah.
Yeah, fair enough. But yeah, so you wanted to do the Let's Rank Toho Godzilla, which would be a really fun episode. But I kind of was like, I don't think me and Mike D have seen enough of the Toho Godzilla to really, like, you know, explore the whole, every era of Godzilla like we would want to do in an episode like that. One day, we're going to get to it. But unfortunately, we couldn't do that. I had a few other ideas thrown out there, but the one that I really kind of latched onto that I thought was really fun was this idea that you had to rank Coen Brothers characters. Not the movies. You didn't want to do a Let's Rank Coen Brothers movies. You wanted to rank characters in Coen Brothers movies.
Yes. I feel like when you rank the movies, it can get pretty argumentative, because I feel like every time I watch a Coen Brothers movie, I'm like, well, that's got to be the best one until I put on another one. I had that issue last night because I watched Fargo and then Raising Arizona back to back. And then I was like, do I change my rankings or do I just let this sit for a couple days? But yeah, I don't know. There's something about the way they handle all of their background characters where they feel like real people, or at least cartoonish versions of people, but they stick with you for years. So it just seemed like a fun idea.
Yeah, I mean, I love the idea. And, you know, Mike D and I are both pretty big fans of the Coen brothers. Mike D, I think you took this as an opportunity to watch a few of the Coen movies that you hadn't seen, right?
Yes. Yeah, there's not that many gaps left. And sort of it's weird that we've been tracking this the last, like, I don't know, month or two on the pod of, like, filling in filmographies for directors and stuff, mostly Fincher and Michael Mann. But yeah, so this was an opportunity for me to watch a couple of the Coen Brothers movies that I haven't seen before. And that was mostly, I ended up just watching two, which was The Hudsucker Proxy, which I feel like is, like, the low-key, if you know, you know, the best one, is how I sort of hear people talk about that. And Miller's Crossing. So I was excited to cross off those. I think I only have Serious Man and Man Who Wasn't There? Or what's that? What's that one?
Yeah,
the Billy Bob Thornton. Yeah, Man Wasn't There. Yeah,
I think those are the only two besides, I guess, Lady Killer and Intolerable Cruelty, which those I think don't count to most.
Which
people.
Are the ones that, like, typically get kind of swept under the rug.
Yeah.
And I will say I do kind of like Intolerable Cruelty. I think that movie's kind of fun. Lady Killer's, you know, it's whatever.
You can't be all. It can't all be.
It's
winners.
Bad. You can say.
Yeah. So, Nick, you've seen, I mean, I've seen every Coen Brothers movie. Nick, have you also seen everyone?
I have also seen every Coen Brothers movie.
Okay. Do you have a least favorite and a favorite?
Yes.
Okay. Least favorite, Lady Killers?
Least favorite, Lady Killers. As a kid, I loved that movie.
Almost universally, everyone's least favorite Coen Brothers movie is The Lady Killers.
I recommend watch it when you're seven and then don't ever revisit it, because I thought it was like another, 4 or 5 stars. And then I watched it 3 or 4 years ago. I was like, oh, this just sucks.
Yeah, it's really weird to, like, look at their filmography and being like, oh, Intolerable Cruelty and Lady Killers came out back to back, like 03 and 04. And what did they make right after that? Like, these are the career low movies for Coen Brothers. Their next movie, No Country for Old Men. Like, holy shit.
Right.
What a comeback.
To bounce back. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. And yeah, so I am also a huge, huge Coen Brothers fan. Somebody who really grew up, especially in, like, high school and college, like, really obsessing over the films of the Coen Brothers. And then for a long time, like, I still love the Coen Brothers, but, you know, it was one of those things where, like, oh, I would check in once in a while, maybe rewatch an old favorite. This past summer at the Roxy, the indie theater near my house in Missoula, Montana, where I also work, we did a series called Easy Coen, where we ended up playing throughout July and August, like 12 of the 18 Coen Brothers movies, like most of their films, played at the Roxy this past summer. I went to most of those movies. I think I made it to like 9 or 10. So I missed a couple that I really wanted to rewatch, like Hudsucker Proxy and No Country for Old Men, but I did get to rewatch a lot of movies that I hadn't seen in a really long time. And I felt like I gained like a renewed appreciation for just how good the Coen brothers are at what they do, you know?
Yeah, they're just the best. It's crazy. Like, I don't know what it is, if it's that, like, madcap comedy hijinks merged with the pitch black crime stuff that just makes these so much fun in most of the movies that have that kind of vibe to them. So it's just, I don't know what it is.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're going to get into it. We're going to rank not the movies. We're ranking Coen Brothers characters. So this is basically just an excuse to, like, say 5 characters that you like a lot. you know, I found it very difficult to, like, actually, like, rank them one above the other. And Nick, I know you were kind of going with more obscure side characters for a lot of your list. I think my number 5 is definitely like a more obscure side character. The rest of them are all fairly major characters. Mike D, how did you kind of approach your list?
I started with the like more obscure side characters, and then the more I was thinking about the movies, I was like, well, but it's got to be the main character. Like, I just that's the thing. Also, like, almost every character is like so impactful in every scene that they're in sure. in the Coen's movies that it's just like kind of hard to narrow down and be like, no, this is the best character or most interesting or most fun and stuff like that. So like already right now looking at this, I'm like, all right, I can delete my 3 through 5 and put in different ones while we're talking about them right now because right. I haven't decided who's what kind of vibe to go with. but it's tough, you know?
It is very tough. So we're going to get into it right now. It's time for Let's Rank. All right, it's time to do it. We're ranking our favorite Coen Brothers characters, 5 through 1. And Nick, we're going to start with you. What is your number 5 Coen Brothers character of all time?
Well, as you mentioned, I was initially aiming for obscure. I did kind of do the Mike D method of, after rewatching several of them, redirecting that a little bit. So there's some weird ones on here, most notably number 5. And then they get more normal.
Okay.
But my number 5 is from my favorite Coen Brothers movie, and that is Marty Randall. First of all, do either of you know who Marty Randall is?
That name rings a bell, because I think I've obviously seen the movie that you're referring to, but I can't pinpoint it. Yeah, Mike D, what about you?
It's not coming to mind. I don't know.
Marty Randall is Jeffrey Lebowski's landlord in the movie The Big Lebowski.
Perfect.
And Lebowski's your favorite, really?
Yes. Last night I watched Fargo and I was like, do I bump that one up? But I don't know. I've been to the Lebowski bar in Iceland, and like after seeing like all this themed stuff, I've probably seen Lebowski more than any movie I've ever seen. And I'm not one of those shithead like people who's just like, this is the best thing ever made, but it is the best thing ever made. So
I'm just not a shithead about it.
Yeah, I'm not a shithead about it. But the reason I picked Marty Randall, the landlord, is because this movie is like, it's kind of chill. It's kind of a hangout movie, but there is like a upward crime plot, and there's a lot of exploitation and people taking advantage of other people. And the landlord is genuinely the only person who interacts with Jeff who is not just trying to get something out of him, which is bizarre because he's his landlord.
Yeah,
but even he stops by to be like, hey, I finally got that venue for my quintet. Would you be able to show up to see my interpretive dance? I'd love to hear your notes. And Jeff is like, of course, I'll go see it. And then afterwards, he's like, also, it's the 10th. Whenever you get the chance, just slip the rent under my door. So he's the only one not trying to pull some sort of con on him. And I can respect that in an otherwise very darkly comic movie.
Yeah, I think it's a great choice. I mean, that was the when you texted me, you were like, I got to find a spot for the landlord from Nick Lebowski.
Yeah.
So that makes sense. I'm glad that this guy made your list. He is such a minor character in this movie. Like of all the characters in the movie, this is probably the one that has like the only one that has like any kind of substantial dialogue scene, but is also like otherwise non-existent in the film.
Yeah.
You know,
he has one speaking scene and then 1 4-minute scene where he's dancing while other people are talking in the audience. And that's it.
Right.
I mean, the button on that scene of just like, oh, also, it's the 10th, dude. Yeah, like it's so chef's kiss to that whole interaction.
Yes. Oh, man. So, so good. What is the character's name again?
Marty Randall. I had to look it up on the Lebowski wiki. And apparently in the script, his name is Alan. In some versions of the DVD, his name is Martin. But in the Netflix version and on the 4K release, the subtitle says Marty. So,
okay.
That's what we know.
There it is. So I'm so glad that Marty Randall made the cut. He is your number 5 Coen Brothers character of all time. Mike D, who is your number 5?
My number 5 is a character from a movie that I hadn't watched until I think this year or last year. Or no, when did we do? It was one of the early Mike Makes Mike Watch movies.
Was it Barton Fink?
It is Barton Fink. I don't remember exactly when we talked about that on the pod. But that is Tony Shalhoub as Ben Geisler, I think. And that is mostly because of the single line of dialogue that I can remember from him is they've taken an interest. And just the way he pronounces interest is hilarious. And I think that is also a recurring thing throughout all the Coen movies. Like Mike was saying, Los Angeles, and just like pronouncing, just putting a little twist, mispronouncing or pronouncing something a little funky. And it's just becoming the defining feature of the character. And I can't really talk about more of Tony Shalhoub's character character other than that I've taken an interest in him.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, Barton Fink is my favorite Coen Brothers movie and also one of my favorite movies of all time, period. I love that movie so much. And Tony Shalhoub is so, so great in it. You know, Tony Shalhoub, somebody who I think later in life I realized, like, oh, I love seeing this guy pop up in movies.
So excited when he shows up.
Yeah. And actually recently, I guess there's a new Monk movie that just came out on Peacock.
What?
And I haven't watched Monk in like, you know, 15 years or like, you know, I didn't even finish Monk when it was airing on TV. But at the same time, I was like, man, I should watch that new Monk movie.
Didn't they just announce USA is like going to bring back all those shows? And so
the characters are welcome back. Characters are they're welcoming back the characters.
Incredible.
Yeah, they're kind of trying to go back to what they used to be doing on USA, kind of bringing back their suits and white collars and burn notices and all that kind of stuff. But Monk built USA. Monk was like the cornerstone of what USA was. And of course, that was largely due to Tony Shalhoub's performance. And yeah, Tony Shalhoub is fantastic in Barton Fink. He is essentially somebody who works at the studio who sort of assists Barton and kind of he's like the liaison between Barton and the head of the studio, played by Michael Lerner.
Right.
And yeah, he's trying to kind of put out fires left and right. And he's so, so funny in everything that he does because he brings like this like screwball comedy quality to the entire proceeding, which a lot of Barton Fink has that element to it. But Tony Shalhoub like really embodies that. And really not just Barton Fink. A lot of Coen Brothers stuff has that screwball comedy element to it. But yeah, Tony Shalhoub is going, yeah, don't you understand, Fink? He's taking an interest. This is the worst thing that could happen to you.
Thanks for really carrying the weight of my pick on that one, Mike.
Of course. Yeah. No, I love Barton Fink and I'm glad that you picked that one because I actually don't have any Barton Fink characters on my list.
Wow.
And I that feels like an oversight, but Barton Fink is my favorite of the movies. And yeah, Tony Shalhoub, so great in that movie. So yeah, what's the character's name again, Mike? Paul Geisler?
Ben Geisler.
Ben Geisler. Yeah, there you go. So that is Mike D's number five from Barton Fink. And then my number five, also going the more obscure route from the most recent Coen Brothers movie, a Coen Brothers movie. So this is not The Tragedy of Macbeth from a single brother. And from The Ballad of Buster Scruggs, I am picking Stephen Root's Bank Teller. Pan shot. so good. Yeah. So of course, The Ballad of Buster Scruggs is a movie that shows it's an anthology film. So it's six different stories. This is the story where James Franco is about to be hanged and then escapes from the hanging and, you know, runs off in the distance. He finds Stephen Root, like a bank teller. And I think he's about to rob his bank or something, or he tries to rob him. And then Stephen Root just fucking tears after him. it's so good. Stephen Root, who mostly speaks in like frontier gibberish, like Blazing Saddles. And then every once in a while shouts pan shot. He covers himself in pots and pans and he's like just firing at James Franco from a distance. It's just such a wild performance from Stephen Root, who is one of those performers that I always like. Tony Shalhoub, I always love seeing Stephen Root pop up in anything. And I think his performance in Buster Scruggs is so funny and does lead James Franco back to the end of his short, which is now the now iconic moment where he is hanging again. And he looks at the other person next to him and says, first time.
Just memed for eternity.
Yes, exactly. So, so good. So, yeah, Stephen Root's Bank Teller is my number five.
It's a solid pick. And Stephen Root's a great, I don't know how many Coen movies he shows up in, but at least in, what is it, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? He's the blind recording artist guy.
Yes.
Hires the Soggy Bottom Boys, so he's vital in every movie. Yeah,
yes, he's an Oh Brother. He also pops up, you know, again, not Brothers movie, but Joel Cohen's Macbeth movie, where he pops up for like 3 minutes and just suddenly the movie turns into like a wacky comedy.
Yeah,
it's really fun to see him. So yeah, Stephen Root, always great, and his Bank Teller is my number five choice for my Coen Brothers characters. Nick, who is your number four?
My number four is from a movie that I think Mike D said he hadn't seen, which is Cy Abelman from the movie A Serious Man.
My number four is also Cy Abelman.
Okay, I guess we can bounce back and forth with this one.
I haven't seen A Serious Man, but the only thing I know about A Serious Man is Cy Abelman.
Yeah.
So this all tracks.
I feel like there were like Mortal Kombat memes going around where they were like, well, they've added a new character, he's unbeatable, and then it's just Cy Abelman standing in the background. But I don't know. He's a genuinely terrifying character in as passive aggressive and as patronizing he chooses to be towards Larry in the movie. I won't spoil anything for Mike D. You're welcome.
Thank you.
But I don't know. He's just, he is such a pain in the ass the entire time. And it's just so like, he can't just take responsibility for anything. It's always just pushing it back on the main character. And they do a whole intro scene with a Dubbock. And the entire time you're watching the movie, you're like, is Cy Abelman coming back essentially to haunt Larry the entire movie? And it's just such a great comedy performance. And every moment he's on screen, I'm just so angry at him, but it's so fucking funny.
Yeah. Cy Abelman, played by Fred Melamed, who is like this weird specter that hangs over the movie. And yeah, it's so, so funny. Like everything that happens, like A Serious Man is a movie that is just about like this series of awful things that happen to this main character and like him trying to get through it and just failing miserably by the end, almost sort of succeeding and then ultimately like kind of succumbing to his like baser urges. But yeah, Cy Abelman is this, you know, haunting figure that even when like about halfway through the movie, Cy Abelman is sort of out of the picture. Again, I'm trying to kind of avoid spoilers from Mike D. Even when he's sort of out of the picture, he still haunts the proceedings in like weird ways. And Fred Melamed's performance is so great as just like, because he just seems so genial and he's so well liked by the community. Like everyone likes Cy Abelman. That's the issue. Like he's terrorizing Larry. Like Larry, you know, is being tortured by this guy. But the community around him, they're all like, yeah, Cy, he's Cy Abelman. He's great.
Yeah.
So yeah, Cy Abelman, also my number four, Nick, a great choice. Yeah.
And there's one specific line reading where he's essentially kicking Larry out of his own house. And he's just like, yeah, well, the Jolly Roger is eminently habitable. And it's like, it's such a horrible way of saying, I'm kicking you out of my house. Go live in this hotel. Also, eminently habitable just means you can live there. Like there's no meaning behind it. It's just so passive aggressive.
Yes, absolutely. So yeah, Cy Abelman, both Nick's and mine, number four pick for Coen Brothers characters. Mike D, who's your number four?
My number four is also from The Ballad of Buster Scruggs, and that is Tom Waits as the prospector in the All Gold Canyon short.
Nice. I had him as an honorable mention, actually.
Yes. I was like, not really sure. I was like, I need to fill one in. Oh, man, Buster Scruggs. And then, of course, it's like every other movie. You're like, well, what about this guy? Well, what about this guy? And you run through 10 people. And I was like, wait, Tom Waits is in this movie. And yeah, his short is just him as this old prospector looking for a gold vein in this valley. And it is just basically a silent film. You know, like it's just a segment of him prospecting and talking to himself. And then, of course, in the standard Coen Brothers dark twist, things, a twist of fate happens to him. And it's just awesome. I mean, it's Tom Waits and he's just this angry, just crazy old man digging holes. And it's wonderful. And you could I could have watched a feature length version of this short if it's just him looking for, was it Mr. Pocket or Mr. Vane?
Mr. Pocket.
Yeah. He's like talking to the gold. And he finally finds him by the end. And yeah, Tom Waits.
Yeah. So yeah, I had him as an honorable mention as well. Honestly, with Buster Scruggs, because there's, you know, six different shorts, all of them have, I think, memorable characters in them. You have Buster Scruggs himself, played by Tim Blake Nelson, who is like a larger than life Looney Tunes character. He's fantastic. You have Zoe Kazan's character, who is so great. The girl who got rattled.
Right.
Right. But yeah, Tom Waits prospector, like Tom Waits is so funny and weird in that role. And there's the moment in that short where he gets shot and the other guy like kind of comes in and starts digging where Tom Waits was digging. Mm-hmm. And then Tom Waits gets up and shoots him and he's like kind of shouting to the heavens like, he didn't hit nothing important.
It's
so triumphant and so great. It's so funny.
Yeah. Yeah. I was originally going to pick one of the other shorts or somebody from one of the other shorts. But I was like, I gotta give Tom Waits the love, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Nice. So Tom Waits as the prospector in Ballad of Buster Scruggs is Mike's number four. We're down to number three. Nick, who's your number three Coen Brothers character of all time?
My number three is Delmer O'Donnell from Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? That is Tim Blake Nelson's character. He's one of the core group of escaped convicts. Similar to the reason why I picked the landlord is he's just kind of like the innocent one in the group. He's always being extremely caring about everyone else. He offers Everett, the main character, Gopher Everett, like 8 times in a row in the background of like a screwball comedy scene. And it just, it stuck with me for 20 years at this point. I don't know. And he seems to be the only one who learns anything too. like throughout the entire movie, everyone's just kind of like shitty criminal, and he gets his sins washed away. So now he can, you know, be enlightened and just be a good guy.
Yeah.
He's the one that falls for the sirens, right? I think also.
The sirens. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, all three of them do fall for the sirens.
True. Yeah.
But yeah, that whole scene's great. He's the one that thinks that John Turturro has turned into a toad.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, no, Tim Blake Nelson is so great there. I mean, he's so great in any, also somebody who I love seeing pop up in just anything. But he pops up in a few Coen Brothers things with Oprah the Art Thou and Battle Buster Scruggs. And yeah, he is fantastic. I love Delmer in Oprah the Art Thou. Great choice, Nick.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right, Mike. What were you going to say, Mike?
I was just going to say, I was originally thinking of an Oh Brother, Where Art Thou character or something, but I just couldn't pick. It was just a glut of perfect characters. And I was like, I'm not even going to touch it. I can't decide.
That's the There's too many good characters in that movie. So you can't choose. So who's your number three, Mike? Who do you got?
My number three is actually a discovery for me, because it is from one of the movies that I had not seen before. And that is Jennifer Jason Leigh as Amy Archer in The Hudsucker Proxy.
Okay.
Which, yeah, this is, I had just never seen this before. And I don't, like I said before, had heard that this is like the, if you know, you know, low-key best one kind of thing. And which is crazy because I think it's their biggest failure as like a terrible box office flop and everything.
Did not do well when it came out. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is bananas, but also makes complete sense when you watch this movie. You're like, I don't even know if 2023 audiences would be ready for this kind of movie. So, yeah, and Jennifer Jason Leigh basically plays this, like, fast-talking newspaper gal who's on the story and is going to find out what's going on with Tim Robbins at the Hudsucker Industries and why he's the idea man and all this stuff. And she's basically doing, I forget the actress's name, but His Girl Friday, right?
Rosalind Russell, yeah.
Yes, Rosalind Russell. Just doing that, and it's amazing. Bruce Campbell's in this movie. How did I not know that? That's crazy. So that was a lot of fun to watch that, and he's just like all Bruce Campbell roles, he exists to say a snarky one-liner and then get slapped. You're like, yes, good. I'm glad that's been your whole career. Yeah, Jennifer Jason Leigh is amazing in this. So I just was like, holy shit, she's gotta be on the list. And also another one of these movies that you could find somebody that has like two or three lines and is just like the best thing. But I think she's amazing in it, Jennifer Jason Leigh. So that's why she's on my list.
Nice. Yeah. Amy Archer and Hudsucker might be coming up on my list in a little bit.
Interesting.
That one scene where she has to like fake that she knows like the high school marching band chant just absolutely incredible stuff.
I mean, that whole scene, I was almost going to pick the two like cab driver guys that are in the diner watching her do the con to Tim Robbins, because they just narrate what she's doing and she's doing it by the book. And then the payoff to that later when she tells Bruce Campbell that like she did this whole song and dance story and he's like, adenoids? And she's like, no, lumbago, which is the same thing with the cab driver's guy. We're like, whoa, she's going with lumbago. Her performance is so good. So there it is.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, going to be coming up on my list too, so I won't say anything yet. But Amy Archer from Hudsucker is Mike's number three. And then my number three, like Nick's, also from Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, although not Delmer, not Tim Blake Nelson's character, actually a different one of that trio, and that is George Clooney as Ulysses Everett McGill from Oh Brother, Where Art Thou. And I rewatched this movie over the summer for Easy Coen, and this, for a long time, I think I did consider this like my favorite Coen Brothers movie. And it is just a movie I've rewatched many, many times. It's so, so great. And I think a large part of that is because this is the movie that I think utilizes George Clooney the best in the Coen Brothers kind of filmography. I mean, it's somebody said a while back, maybe it was just some random guy on Twitter or whatever it was, but the key that Steven Soderbergh like found to George Clooney is casting him as like the coolest guy on earth. And the key that the Coen brothers found to George Clooney is casting him as the guy who thinks he's the coolest guy on earth, or thinks he's the smartest one in the room. And that is very much Ulysses Everett McGill. He is, you know, fast talking. He kind of, he is sort of the leader of this group with him, Tim Blake Nelson, and John Turturro. And, you know, he's really on this quest to get his wife back, who, you know, he went to jail. His wife, played by Holly Hunter, they've got kids, and she's kind of like disowned him. She's getting married to somebody else, and he's on a quest to get her back, and he is so like above it all the entire time, and it's really funny to see him like kind of come to terms with like things he can't explain, but like tries to find a way to rationalize them anyway. The very end of the movie where, you know, he has to go back to get the ring from the dress dresser to get the wedding ring back. And then the entire town floods, like everything floods. And it's like, oh, this is clearly like an act of God. Like this is something that can't possibly be explained. And George Clooney, like after a moment of like, you know, seeming clarity, is like, oh yeah, well, you know, they've been flooding all towns all over the place. You know, they got, like, you know, yes, sir. The South is going to change. We're going to have progress. Like, you know, all that stuff. And it's so funny. And it's clear that like no matter what kind of like supernatural craziness happens to him, he can find a way to rationalize it in some kind of like pseudo intellectual way. And yeah, he's so good at making himself seem like the smartest one in the room when he's clearly also one of the dumbest. And there's so many just funny moments involving that character. So yeah, Ulysses Everett McGill, O Brother, Where Art Thou? He's my number three.
Hell yeah.
Great pick. Yeah.
I mean, it's one of those things that like all these movies also are, to borrow a phrase, I guess, from Cy Abelman, eminently quotable. It's just so impossible not to think of like how iconic all of them are, you know?
Oh, sure. Yeah. And with Everett McGill, it's like, oh, I'm the goddamn paterfamilias. You know, that. That's one. I'm a dapper damn man. I don't want to fop. Yeah. Ain't this place a geographical oddity? 2 weeks from everywhere.
That's my favorite one.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just a perfect movie, you know?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
I think when he's talking to like the railroad guy in the beginning, where he's just like, I don't have a job, I don't have a name. And instead of just moving on or like, oh, this is insightful, he just has to be like, well, in order to gain gainful employment in this modern world, you must have a name and prosper and all this. And it is so fucking funny.
Yes, absolutely. So that is my number three, Ulysses Everett McGill from O Brother, Where Art Thou. We're down to number two. Nick, who's your choice?
My number two choice is Oscar Isaac as Llewyn Davis in the movie Inside Llewyn Davis.
Nice. I have this as an honorable mention as well.
Okay. Were it not for Big Lebowski, I think this would be my favorite Coen Brothers movie. But again, I'll rewatch No Country for Old Men like next week and probably bump that one up six spaces. So who really knows?
Right.
Yeah.
But I don't know. This is a very interesting point because I feel like the last decade of Coen Brothers stuff is when it stops being as outright funny and is a bit more dour, especially with No Country and A Serious Man. And this one is just like such a absolutely debilitating portrait of how an artist has to deal with things. Also, Llewyn is constantly working against his own self-interest in the entire time for like a purpose of like artistic integrity. And it feels pretty autobiographical for like the Coen brothers, because the entire time he's just trying to make it on his own. And the like crux of it at the end, once he's had failed careers and everything else, is just like, well, you should just get back with your partner. And it's just so defeating the entire time. But yeah, also love the music that he sings. He's a very talented musician, that Oscar Isaac.
Yeah, absolutely. I rewatched Inside Llewyn Davis this past summer, having not seen it since it came out. And it was immediately like, this is a top three Coen Brothers movie. Like, this is real high up there. It's basically perfect. Like, it was one of those movies that's like so good that it almost made you mad.
Yeah.
Like, at how good it was. And Oscar Isaac is just incredible as Llewyn Davis, and also kind of makes you mad as like, what's he been up to? Like, what's he wasting his time in Star Wars for? Come on, get back doing this kind of stuff. Yeah, no, it's he's incredible as Llewyn Davis, and I think this movie is really funny. Like, it's a very, very funny movie, but also just completely devastating. And so I saw this this past summer in a packed theater. It was sold out. Most of those Coen Brothers movies that we played this summer were sold out. And so Llewyn Davis was sold out. I knew a few people who were in the audience, and one of them was a dancer, you know, somebody who is in the arts and stuff. And afterwards, I talked to her, like, oh, what'd you think of the movie? And she's like, man, that was pretty real. That's pretty rough.
Damn.
I was like, oh, yeah. Yeah, I get it. Yeah, no, it is just it's very much about like that grind of being an artist and like just trying anything to get to the point where people recognize your work as good and you can make money off of it, and just failing at every single turn. And yeah, that scene with Llewyn Davis and F. Murray Abraham is just completely destroyed me when I watched it this past summer.
I don't see a lot of money here. It's just after he pours his heart and soul into singing the song, and then just the button at the end where like, oh, we're literally starting the or ending the movie exactly where it started, so the cycle's repeating, and Bob Dylan is there. So right. It's just like he literally cannot make his way out of this.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And despite it being like devastating at all those points and stuff, like there's still stuff like Please, Mr. Kennedy, which is like the most delightful thing that's ever been filmed.
Absolutely.
Adam Driver in the running space. For being on this list. You know?
Yeah. Al Cody was in my honorable mentions. So.
I mean, the thing that devastates me the most about Llewyn Davis, which I also watched for the first time, maybe was that last year? It was another Mike Makes Mike Watch, I think, recently or something.
Oh, really? Okay.
I think so. Was the moment when he has given up, right? He's like, fuck it, I'll go to the union like my dad and all this stuff. And his sister has thrown out the box of things with his union card in it. So now they can't hire him. And it's just like, oh my God, how much lower can a person get? Like you've given up on your dream. You've admitted defeat. Fuck it. I'll go get this manual labor job as like a longshoreman or whatever it is. And like, nope, somebody threw out your union card. So now you can't get a job. Just heartbreaking.
Yes, so good. So Llewyn Davis from Inside Llewyn Davis is Nick's number two Coen Brothers character of all time. Mike D, who's your number two?
My number two is from a movie I rewatched this weekend that I hadn't seen maybe since it came out or it had been a really long time. And I feel like at least in my remembrance or like my estimation is like, yeah, it's okay. Like, whatever. Although I think now I'm remembering it won some Oscars or something. That's True Grit. I can't really remember, actually.
Okay, yeah. But True Grit definitely nominated for some Oscars.
I'm not sure if it won any.
Okay, yeah. It's definitely nominated. But I feel like it's one of those things that, like, you know, the backlash to usually like the popular things is like, well, it wasn't really that good. Like, whatever. So I hadn't watched it in a really long time. And I watched it this past weekend and it was like 5 stars. My favorite movie. Like, same experience we're having with every movie we watch from them. But my number two performance is, of course, Hailee Steinfeld as Maddie Ross in True Grit because
nice.
Character. Yeah. Incredible, absolutely amazing. But also, I was originally rewatching this being like, I'm going to pick Matt Damon. Like, you know, like I was like, yeah, he's a fun character. And he is great. LaBeouf is amazing. But Maddie Ross is just 10 out of 10. Incredible. So much fun. And the whole, you know, I mean, this is also a remake based on a novel, so I don't know like how original of a character it is. I haven't read the other books read the book or seen that movie, the John Wayne version, but just the whole like almost Shakespearean dialogue that everybody is talking in, just like this could be said in 5 words, but we're gonna make it take 20, whatever sentence they're saying is amazing. So yeah, she's so great. And I think it was also her debut, or at least her first feature film.
It was Hailee Steinfeld's debut film. And I don't think she was in much for a while after that. Like, I think it was like 6 years until I saw her in something like after True Grit. Like, I think she was in Pitch Perfect 2.
Yeah.
Which was like 2015. But then I didn't see that at the time. I next saw her in The Edge of 17.
Right.
Which was like 2016. So like 6 years after True Grit, Hailee Steinfeld kind of came back.
Yeah. And I think she was like 13 or 14 while they were filming it. So like, it makes sense. That she'd be like, I gotta go to high school, which is crazy. And she's up there against Matt Damon and Jeff Bridges and everybody, and it's amazing. And she's just like destroying the whole movie. I almost picked the guy that I think is I can't remember if he's like a banker or lawyer or whatever in the town that sold the horses to her father that like kicks off the whole plot of the movie. And she's like trying to sell them back to him and just completely hoodwinks him. And he's just so confused. And then later on, when she comes to collect the money, she starts talking about something else, and he's like, wait. Are we negotiating again? Like, he's so scared of her. I almost picked him because he's amazing. But Maddie Ross, number two.
I'm delighted by this pick, Mike, because I completely forgot about it. I like True Grit. I liked that movie a lot when it came out. I've seen it a couple of times, but I haven't seen it in a very long time. And you know, when I think of it now, I'm like, oh yeah, Jeff Bridges, Rooster Cogburn, like that's the thing. But I completely forgot like how great Hailee Steinfeld was in that movie.
It's
like
amazing.
She's just like a firecracker in it. She's amazing.
Yeah, and you got Barry Pepper as just like this gross cowboy guy, and it's 10 out of 10 movie, like all the other ones.
Yes. Honestly, the thing that I remember the most about True Grit is I think it's Jeff Bridges and Hailee Steinfeld are riding somewhere and they're looking for LaBeouf, and some guy shows up and he's in a bear costume.
Yeah, he's a doctor. Yeah.
And he just like stares at him for a minute, and Jeff Bridges is like, you are not LaBeouf.
Yeah, they like set up to ambush. Well, not ambush him. They're like ahead of him on the trail, and they're like they think they're being followed, so they like set off on the brush. And it's just like a really long. And I think there's like a wipe to make it be nighttime now. Like they've been sitting there for hours, and then this guy in the bear costume shows up, and it's so good.
Nice. All right. So Hailee Steinfeld's Maddie Ross is Mike D's number two from True Grit, and then my number two is one that Mike D mentioned already. Amy Archer from The Hudsucker Proxy. And so, like I said, I meant to rewatch Hudsucker Proxy this past weekend. I was really hoping to. I did not get the chance to. I was like, well, I can watch Hudsucker or I can catch up on a 2023 release, see if it makes my top 10. And I ended up watching Master Gardener, Paul Schrader's new movie. Spoilers, not going to make my top 10. not a very good movie, I thought, which was unfortunate. So I should have watched Hudsucker Proxy instead. But Hudsucker Proxy is a movie that I feel like I have been championing for a very long time. Like I saw this maybe right out of college or right when I was in college or whatever. And like, I was kind of blown away by like, oh my God, I can't believe how good this movie is. And how no one seems to be talking about it. And now I think it has developed that kind of cult a little bit of like, you know, it, like you said, Mike, that if you know, kind of situation where like real Coen Brothers fans, like real Scorsese fans know that After Hours is the best film. You know,
exactly.
You know, that's the kind of thing. And Hudsucker Proxy, I think, is the After Hours for the Coen Brothers in a weird way. And Hudsucker Proxy is so fun. It's so funny. And Jennifer Jason Leigh as Amy Archer, like you said, it's so great. It's so on point. The perfect screwball comedy, Rosalind Russell type. Everything. I was rewatching clips from Hudsucker Proxy before we started this podcast, just to kind of refresh my memory a little bit. And like the second she walks into the room and she's like, ah, this is bunk, Alice, total bunk. I'll stake my Pulitzer on it. you know, her back and forth with Bruce Campbell and then her like kind of back and forth with Tim Robbins. It's so, so great. So yeah, I had to give Amy Archer a spot on the list, even though I didn't get a chance to rewatch the movie. But yeah, the Hudsucker Proxy, Amy Archer, my number two as well.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. All right. And now we are down to our number one Coen Brothers characters of all time. These are the greatest characters in the entire canon of the Coen Brothers. So no pressure, guys. But Nick, who's your choice for your number one Coen Brothers character of all time?
Norville Barnes. No.
It's the idea, man.
Yeah. So this is where the list gets the most away from me from when I was trying to pick, you know, smaller characters and more
right.
obscure.
You were originally going, you know, for characters like the landlord from Big Lebowski.
Yeah. And then my rewatch last night really cemented it that Marge Gunderson is the best Coen Brothers character in any movie.
Hard to dispute. Hard to dispute.
But I don't know. I feel like, again, I feel 90% of my picks, I feel like, are based on this. But the whole movie is so dark and nihilistic. And so many Coen Brothers characters are just like completely punished the whole time, or they do these horrible things. And the entire thing is just consequences. And Marge is just like the one positive person the entire way through, where like even when she's angry at someone, she expresses it in a way that's like super positive. Where when she's yelling at Jerry in the car dealership, she's just like, you don't have to get mad at me. But that's not, she's not angry at him. She's just advising him that no, he doesn't have to handle it this way.
Right.
And
he's fleeing the scene.
And the fact that half of her detective work is done while she's like eating and like stuff like that, it just makes her feel like a human character beyond like a lot of comedic pastiches that like a lot of background characters get in other Coen Brothers movies. And she's just like a well of positivity. And specifically that last 2 minutes of Fargo where she looks at Norm when he doesn't get the, I think it's the 29 cent stamp mallard. He gets the 3 cent stamp. And she's just like, well, you know, when the price of stamps go up, people are going to be, you know, clamoring for those 3 cent stamps. And then they just hug each other and the movie ends. And it's just the sweetest, most comforting shot in any movie I've ever seen. So Marge, number one.
Yeah, I mean, a great choice, great performance from Frances McDormand, won an Oscar for it, I believe. And yeah, it is truly like this ray of light in this against this incredibly bleak backdrop that Fargo kind of portrays. That's a great choice. Marge Gunderson from Fargo, number one for Nick.
Thank you.
It's funny, when I was originally making my list, I tried to do the Tony Shalhoub character, you know, like those kind of things, the side character, yeah. Same thing. And I got to number one and I put Norm Gunderson. And then I was like, what am I doing? And I crossed it out. It's Marge Gunderson. She's, of course, number one. Of course she is.
Okay. So she's your number one.
She's
too.
Number one. Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. And I was like, my first pass through with all the weird side character stuff. And then I was like, no, it's got to be Marge.
Yeah.
She's a perfect character. She's amazing. This is one of those movies. Fargo is one of those movies that somehow just like made itself into like a foundational text amongst my friend groups. in particular my college friends and stuff, and producer Colin, we were always just saying, like, I think I've told this before, like, whenever we do like a big boys weekend or whatever, and we all like wake up hungover the next morning, we're like, you gotta have a breakfast, Marge. Like, you gotta, I'll fix you some eggs. It's like, we're always quoting it. And even though this is Steve Buscemi, the like, let's settle this here in Brainerd when he's trying to bribe the cop on the highway.
Right.
Just always throwing weird quotes in. And yeah, she's, Marge is so perfect. And while she's like 8 months pregnant this whole time, and she just absolutely is one a delight throughout the whole movie, which is, like we were saying, so dark and dour. And Steve Buscemi and the other guy, I can't remember his name.
Stormare.
Yes, Peter Stormare are just so awful to each other and to everybody. And they're just funny looking in a general sort of way.
Right.
And yeah, it's perfect character, perfect movie. It's Marge Gunderson.
Nice. Yeah. So Marge Gunderson is not my number one.
You son of a bitch.
Coward.
I'm sorry, guys.
Is it Norm?
No, it's not Norm. I actually did have Norm as an honorable mention.
Oh, nice.
And I actually almost put Mike Yamagita on this list as well.
Yeah,
as
yeah,
well.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. Fargo is a movie that I really love. You know, it's great. But I, for me, it's never been as foundational as some other Coen Brothers movies. There are other movies that I've I like a lot more than Fargo that I've rewatched many more times. So I did rewatch Fargo this past summer as part of Easy Coen and had a great time. It was super fun to watch that with the crowd. And honestly, I think it was the first time I had seen it since college, like since before the Fargo TV show started.
Wow.
Which, by the way, Fargo season 5 airing right now, really good. A huge comeback for season 5 of Fargo.
Isn't Jennifer Jason Leigh in it, right?
She is. Yeah, Jennifer Jason Leigh is in it, playing a very different character than she does in the Hudsucker Proxy. But killing it. She's so good. But no, my number one is from a foundational text to me. And so this is, like I said, Barton Fink is my favorite Coen Brothers movie. This is my second favorite Coen Brothers movie. And that is H.I. McDonough from Raising Arizona.
Yeah.
Played by one Nicolas Cage, who you may or may not know. Mike D and I, we've watched a few Nicolas Cage movies in our day.
I think this character is the reason we did season one of The Complete Works.
That is likely, actually. Yeah, no. Raising Arizona is, again, rewatching it this past summer for the first time in a while. And that was when I had rewatched more recently. Like, I had watched it. I had shown this movie to my girlfriend in, like, 2019 because my costume that year for Halloween was H.I. McDonough from Raising Arizona.
Nice.
But I rewatched it this summer with a sold-out crowd, and it was just the biggest smile on my face the entire time. It was such a perfect screening, and it was so great to rewatch this movie and kind of really lock into Nick Cage's performance again and Holly Hunter's performance again. And you know, it's a movie that is so funny and silly and surreal and weird, but is also so sincere. It's so emotional and sincere, and really makes you care about the characters in a way that I don't think other Coen Brothers movies often do. Not that like you don't care about like what happens to, you know, certain characters, but I think this movie like really taps into like you really are really invested in the journey of H.I. McDonough, Edwina, his wife, Holly Hunter. And it's so weird because like, oh, they're stealing a baby. Like, right. That's the plot of the movie. But I think, you know, the writing is so like flourishy and like interesting. And Cage and Hunter's performance are so good. So H.I. McDonough from Raising Arizona, he is my number one Coen Brothers character of all time.
Just the fact that they call him High.
Yeah.
It's like, whoa, yeah. Incredible. I don't know.
Neither of them, the McDonoughs, made my list because I could not pick who was my favorite, and I didn't want to represent one without representing the other. Specifically, just quick shout out for Edwina. When they steal the baby and she looks at him for the first time and just goes, I love him so, and just bursts into
just
tears.
Crying, yeah.
Yeah. Immediately, I'm like, I don't give a shit if they're criminals. They're good people. It's fine.
Yeah, and you know, a High's kind of, you know, thing where he's an outlaw, you know, you can see it in his eyes. There's a little twinkle in his eyes.
Yeah.
You know, High's whole thing where he's an outlaw and he's trying to do right by Ed and he's trying to, you know, be a better person, but he has that like outlaw streak in him. And he, like, when his friends show up at the door, John Goodman and William Forsythe, who break out of jail, he's like, well, honey, we got to show, you know, a little hospitality. And he's trying to like, you know, regain his masculinity a little bit in front of the guys, but, you know, is also trying to care about Edwina. And, you know, he ends up stealing the Huggies, and there's a huge chase with the dogs and the everything. It's so wild. It's so fun. So yeah, Raising Arizona, H.I. McDonough. He is my number one. How could I not have picked Nicolas Cage at the end of this list, you know? So to recap, let's recap our lists, our top fives, and then let's go into some honorable mentions here. So Nick, who was your 5 through 1?
My 5 through 1 was Marty Randall, the landlord from Big Lebowski at number 5, Cy Abelman, the one and only, at number 4, yes, from A Serious Man, Delmer O'Donnell from Oh Brother, Where Art Thou at number 3, Llewyn Davis from Inside Llewyn Davis at number 2, and number 1, Marge Gunderson from Fargo.
There you go. Mike D, who are your 5?
My 5 was at number 5, Ben Geisler in Barton Fink, The Prospector, played by Tom Waits, in Ballad of Buster Scruggs, Amy Archer in The Hudsucker Proxy at number 3, Maddie Ross from True Grit in number 2, and of course, the one and only Marge Gunderson from Fargo at number 1.
There you go. And then my number 5 was Stephen Root's bank teller from The Ballad of Buster Scruggs. My number 4 was Cy Abelman from A Serious Man. My number 3 was Ulysses Everett McGill from Oh Brother, Where Art Thou. My number 2 was Amy Archer from The Hudsucker Proxy. My number 1 was H.I. McDonough from Raising Arizona. I am a little bit surprised that not one of us picked the dude as one of our 5 here.
It's the implied number 1.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's too obvious, right? That was kind of the thing. So, Nick, who do you have for some honorable mentions? What do you got?
Well, as I said, Al Cody, Adam Driver from Inside Llewyn Davis, because, again, he's just one of those people where, like, he doesn't just show up as a joke. Like, he clearly has a pre-movie and post-movie life, and I feel like that lived-in experience just makes him that much more engaging. This is maybe a cheat, but essentially everything John Goodman has ever played in a Coen Brothers movie, because this whole list could have been John Goodman characters.
It certainly could have, yeah.
And it would have been fine.
I do think John Goodman deserved an Oscar for Barton Fink. Like, he should have gotten it for that one, you know, but also for Lebowski. He's amazing, Lebowski.
He's incredible.
I was even surprised that he's the newsreel narrator in Hudsucker Proxy, and I was like, oh, this
I didn't
is
even
amazing.
Know that. Yeah, again, make the entire list just John Goodman. And then this is one, because I feel like this movie doesn't get enough credit. We were a little bit insulting Intolerable Cruelty earlier. I think it's a solid 3.5 movie.
That's what I said it's solid. Yeah. I enjoyed it. I saw it once and had a good time with it.
Gus Petch, played by Cedric the Entertainer, who clearly was not given very much to work with in the movie. His entire character revolves around, he takes videos of people cheating and says, I'm going to nail their ass. And there's one specific quote, which almost made me add him to the list, which was, you want tact, you call a tactician. You want someone's ass nailed, you call Gus Pelch. So if that's not a selling point, I don't know what is.
Incredible. Any other mentions, Nick?
Hobie Doyle. Hail Caesar. I could legitimately, he's one of mine. I could just start listing 75 other characters, so I'm going to cut myself off right here.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Mike D, who are your honorable mentions?
I was thinking originally John Polito in which one? In Miller's Crossing as Johnny Casper, who's the like rival crime boss guy that kind of kicks off the whole plot because it's a question of ethics, you understand. And he's so fun. And he's one of those guys that's in a lot, the same thing. He's in a lot of their movies, but usually in a much smaller role from what I remember. And this is pretty significant. I think he's like the private detective guy that's like tailing Lebowski. Yeah. He's trying to learn from him. Just incredible.
Trying to find the Knudsen girl.
Exactly. Him in having a pretty substantial role in Miller's Crossing was pretty fun for me. Like I said, the lawyer or whatever guy in the office in True Grit, and just same kind of thing. It could kind of just be everybody is the hard part. So I didn't really think about who I didn't pick. Peter Stormare's, I love the, he never says a word, matched up against Steve Buscemi, who never shuts up. Pairing in Fargo is so much fun. And just all of them, you know, everybody.
Yeah,
basically.
Nice. My honorable mentions, like I mentioned before on Mike's list, Tom Waits' Prospector and Buster Scruggs is on there for me. Walter from The Big Lebowski, John Goodman is so, so funny in that movie. And then also, honestly, I could fill this with just Big Lebowski characters. Sure, from the whole filmography and stuff, but Walter from Lebowski, Julianne Moore in Lebowski, David Thewlis in Lebowski, just sitting in the corner and laughing. But the other Lebowski one that I really wanted to draw attention to was Philip Seymour Hoffman as Brandt, who I think that's a performance that, because it's so far down the list of, like, you know, he's not in that much of the movie. He is kind of like ancillary to a lot of the action. He's kind of just the second to the elder Lebowski. you don't really think of Brandt as one of the best characters in the movie. However, Hoffman fucking kills it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Lebowski, he's so good. The moment where he introduces Jeff Lebowski to Bunny, and Bunny says, "I'll suck your cock for $1,000. And the laugh that Hoffman emits, it's like... yes, we're all very fond of her sense of humor around here, and
so good.
It's so great. The way he answers, leaves the messages on the dude's machine, and he just keeps saying it's Brandt over and over again. It's so funny. The way he opens the doors as the music swells and he enters like the Elder Lebowski's domain is so funny. So yeah, Philip Seymour Hoffman as Brandt is one for me. Llewyn Davis, also an honorable mention for me. Like Nick mentioned, Hobie Doyle from Hail Caesar, who is Alton Ehrenreich's character, the singing cowboy, who has the iconic "Would That It Were So Simple" scene.
I was just going to bring that up, yeah.
Which is so great between him and Ralph Fiennes. You know, he's just like a simple guy who, trying to be like, he's a cowboy actor who gets kind of cast into this sort of upper society, kind of movie. And it's clearly not his wheelhouse. And he's just not doing a great job with it. And he's very, very funny. And then also my other one is Norm from Fargo, which watching Fargo again this year really kind of reminded me of how beautiful the relationship is between Marge and Norm. How Marge gets a call at like 3 a.m. and she's about to leave. And Norm's like, "You got to have breakfast, Marge. You got to have some breakfast."
Some eggs.
Makes, mm-hmm. Yeah, fix her some eggs, and he makes her some eggs before she leaves for work, and it's very
and
nice.
He jumps
very
the prowler.
Yeah, that's right. I think before we move on too, I wanted to highlight Ben Gazzara as Jackie Treehorn in Big Lebowski, because he's got one of my favorite, I mean, I guess it's not really like his thing, but one of my favorite throwaway jokes in all of their movies is that scene where the dude is talking to Jackie Treehorn, and Treehorn gets that phone call, and he writes on the notepad, and he's like, "I gotta take this," and he walks out of the room, and dude runs over with the pencil and like traces over it, and it's just a giant wang. It's just a drawing of a dick on the notepad. It's one of the funniest 5 seconds in a movie of all time. I don't understand anything about it, but I wanted to highlight the wang picture that Ben Gazzara draws in Big Lebowski.
Yes. Fantastic. I'm going to give one more shout out also to Brad Pitt in Burn After Reading, who is very, very funny. I watched that movie this summer for the first time since maybe high school. And there's the moment when he's like blackmailing John Malkovich over the phone. And he's like, "We thought you might be worried about the security of your shit." And then they finally meet up and John Malkovich just punched him in the face. It's very, very good. So yeah, Brad Pitt in Burn After Reading is also somebody who I would throw out there.
All good calls.
I forgot that's a Coen Brothers movie.
Yeah, I feel like it's one that kind of gets slept on a little bit, right?
Yeah.
I feel like any movie other than maybe Lady Killers would be like top five of any other director. Like even True Grit, I rewatched that and I was like, best 5-star movie that's a 4-star movie just because I can't put it that high on the Coen Brothers list, you know?
Yeah, right. Absolutely. Any other random like last minute additions to your honorable mentions that you guys want to throw out there? Any quick stuff?
Tony Shalhoub is also very good in The Man Who Wasn't There. So
okay, yeah. That's one I need to rewatch. I saw that once when I was maybe like freshman in college and haven't seen since. But I thought it was like solid. It was pretty good.
I'll throw out Sam Raimi as that one cop in Miller's Crossing.
Oh yeah, he gets just demolished. Gets blown away. Yeah.
It's so funny.
Very nice.
Because you always forget that they're like connected, you know, that they, the Coens and Sam Raimi. And
Joel Coen was an editor on The Evil Dead.
Right.
They made Crime Wave together. And they were very closely associated for a very long time until like the mid 90s. Like even in Hudsucker Proxy, Sam Raimi directed the montage of like the hula hoop becoming invented. That whole sequence is all Sam Raimi, which Bruce Campbell is obviously in the movie and stuff like that. And then the Coens made Fargo. They went legit. And then Sam Raimi, I think, tried to go legit and like kind of had some box office failures before Spider-Man. But weirdly, like after Fargo, Sam Raimi's next movie, A Simple Plan, also a wintry crime movie. Also a really good movie too, just throwing that out there, and featuring Billy Bob Thornton, who also worked with the Coen brothers on Man Who Wasn't There. So
and Intolerable Cruelty.
Oh yeah, he was in that too. Yeah. So connections happening everywhere. But love the Coens, love Sam Raimi. One day we'll do a Let's Rank Sam Raimi characters. That'd be fun.
That'd be fun.
I'll be back.
And all four versions of him.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would just be Deadites. Like it would just be different Deadites.
Ranky Deadites.
Henrietta number two. But all right, Nick, thank you so much for joining us this week, and thank you for the episode idea. This is great.
Of course. Yeah. Thank you so much for having me on. This did bring about a crisis of how much of a movie do I need to watch before I can rank it on Letterboxd again? Because I would say I watched about 50 minutes of 10 different Coen Brothers movies to prepare for this, but I only logged two of the movies that I watched in full. So,
okay,
where do you guys cut off?
I would say you have to watch the whole movie in order to rank on Letterboxd. That said, I did log the recent Little Mermaid remake after having only watched 40 minutes of it or 50 minutes of it. But I mentioned that in my review that I said that because I was so infuriated that the movie was almost an hour in and she hadn't turned human yet. Like it was like the original movie would have been almost over by now.
Yeah. Okay. I guess I'll skip that one.
Yeah. If you haven't seen it, I don't recommend it. Okay. You know, granted, I only watched the first 50 minutes. Maybe it gets great afterwards. Who's to say?
Better than a Master Gardener?
I would say I enjoyed Master Gardener more than the first 50 minutes.
You at least finished it.
The Little Mermaid. You know what infuriated me about the Little Mermaid remake? I got to when they play Under the Sea, which, you know, there's a line in Under the Sea saying, "We have a hot crustacean band," right? And, you know, the flute plays the flute. And there's a whole thing where all the different fish are playing different instruments. But because it's like meant to be realistic, none of the fish are playing instruments and none of them are dancing. It sucks.
They're not as brave as Aquaman, which had a giant octopus play the drums.
Exactly. And that's why Aquaman 2 is going to make $1 billion. But there you go. Yeah, let's rank Coen Brothers characters. We did it, and it was Nick's idea. So, yeah, once again, Nick, thank you for this.
Happy to help.
Yeah. All right. Nick, if anybody wants to find you online this week, where can they do that?
I am officially off of Twitter.com as of 4 months ago. I'm still keeping that Downey Plus Ultra tag, so sure. No one better take it. I check in every few months to make sure it's there. And you can find me on Letterboxd as Wermuth, Wermuth. And that is my only online presence other than Instagram, which I'm not telling you about.
Fair enough. How does that feel, Nick, to not be on Twitter anymore?
I spend most of my day opening up the New York Times, not reading anything, and then closing it.
So just like Twitter?
Yeah. I don't feel as endlessly depressed, so it is helping.
Good. That's good. That's very good. Mike D, where can we find you online this week?
You can find me at MD Film Blog on Twitter and Letterboxd, and you can also find me at MD Film Blog on Blue Sky. If you want new Twitter without Nazis yet, asterisk, we'll see what happens with that. You can also donate to support the show at our Ko-fi page, which is ko-fi.com/MikeAndMikePods. And if you want to donate $50, you can pick an episode or be our friend. Pick a topic for us to cover, donate $50 on Ko-fi and we'll do it. And if you want merch, you can also get merch on our Redbubble, which is mikeandmikepods.redbubble.com.
That's right. And you can find me online. It's M Smith Film Blog on Twitter, Mike Smith Film on Letterboxd, and Radio Mike Sandwich Instagram. And I am also on Blue Sky, trying to get back into using that more often again. I'm also M Smith Film Blog there as well. I'm posting a daily media diary. If people want to see just what I've been watching besides Letterboxd, they can do it there.
Perfect.
Thank you so much for listening to Mike and Mike Go to the Movies. I'm Mike Smith. That's Mike DiCrescio. And that is Nick Wermuth. Don't forget to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or any other podcast app. And if you want to contact us, you can hit us up at Mike and Mike Pod on Twitter. You can find the rest of our podcast and Rapture Press alongside many other podcasts, all kinds of comic books and movie news and all that good stuff. So next week, should we do a Mike Makes Mike Watch next week, Mike? Should we finish out our
what
thing?
I was going to suggest.
Okay, great. So next week, it's going to be Mike Makes Mike Watch. I'll be making Mike D watch the 1974 film Black Christmas.
Yes.
Directed by Bob Clark, director of A Christmas Story. and Mike D is going to be making me watch Roland Emmerich's 2012. So
from 2019.
From 2009. 2009, yeah. So some disparate quality levels, I think, happening here between the two movies.
One of you drew the short straw here.
We'll see. We'll see which one, you know?
We'll see. We will certainly see. I am sort of interested in watching it. I mean, I kind of wanted to see it like when it came out and never got around to it. And this year has just been filling in the Roland Emmerich holes in my... you've been filling in David Fincher and Michael Mann films, Mike, and I get to fill in the Roland Emmerich-sized hole in my
life. It's going to make you a real Emmerich head, you know?
Yes. I watched White House Down a couple months ago, thanks to producer Colin, which that episode is Lost to the Sands of Time, I believe. And Nick, in case you don't know, Colin was on that episode and he lost his audio halfway through.
But didn't realize for 45 minutes. So
yeah. Oh, you're making me nervous now. I feel like I need to check my audacity. I'm still rolling.
Let's go.
Good. But yeah, never seen 2012. So looking forward to it. I think, is Lance Reddick in it?
Honestly, I don't know. I don't remember.
I think Lance Reddick's in it. And if
might
so,
as well be.
If Lance Reddick's in it, I'll have a good time. I'm pretty sure it'll be a good.
John Cusack, Twiddle Ejiofor. What more do you need? Danny Glover?
There you go. Danny Glover, sure. All right, so yeah, next week, Mike Makes Mike Watch. It'll be Black Christmas in 2012. In the meantime, the Complete Works just got back in the cage to talk Dream Scenario for our last episode of that podcast for 2023. Nick, have you seen Dream Scenario yet?
I have not.
Oh, man. You should watch it. It's really good.
Okay.
Did you like Beau Is Afraid?
I did. I loved Beau Is Afraid.
You're in, baby.
Okay.
Nice.
If there's any showtimes near me, I'll be there.
Yes, absolutely. Is Beau Is Afraid going to make your 10, Nick? Just out of curiosity.
I feel like it's got big top 10 up the letterbox vibes for the pod.
It's either 10 or 11.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It is in my 10 right now. It's probably going to be, unless, I think it's in the number 4 spot. So unless I see 6 movies that I like more than Beau Is Afraid in the next couple of weeks, it's going to be in my 10.
Nice.
It's going to be happening.
My letterbox isn't loading. Let's just say, yeah, it's 10.
Okay, fair enough.
In the conversation.
Yeah.
Yes, definitely very high up there for me. So yeah, we'll be, and very, very soon, within a few weeks from now, probably, or a month from now or whatever, whenever we get around to it, Mike D and I will be recording a big 2023 year in review episode where we'll do our top 10 lists, and that will include a selection from Nick Wormuth as well.
Happy to be included as always.
Yeah.
I don't think my number one will change before then. So if anyone wants a sneak peek, look at that letterbox.
All right. Fair enough. And Nick, you might be back in the podcast in a couple of weeks. We're going to do an in-person episode. We're kind of still deciding, sort of. I'm going to put a text out to the group and see who's around and what they want to talk about. But there's a few different options that are on the table. And so, yeah, we'll be doing an in-person episode and hopefully we'll see you there, Nick.
I'm happy to be there unless I have to rewatch Fast X or something.
That would be the funniest thing if we just talked about Fast X again. Actually,
you'd get one empty audio file and that'd be from me sitting silently in the back.
All right, Nick, thanks again for joining us. That is the end of this week's episode of Mike and the Go to the Movies. We will see you on the other side.